Species unite.
In Montana now, they allow using dogs to chase down wolves, which, you know, essentially becomes like state-sanctioned dog fighting. You have this horrible scenario where the packs of dogs are surrounding the wolf pack and it just comes to a bloody end. And these are blood sports. Yeah. This is something that we should be way beyond as a society.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Novogratz. This is Species Unite. We have a favor to ask. If you like today's episode and you have a spare minute, could you please rate and review Species Unite on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts? It really helps people to find the show.
This conversation is with Colette Adkins. Colette is the Carnivore Conservation Director at the Center for Biological Diversity. She focuses on combating the exploitation and cruel treatment of wolves and other rare wildlife. I wanted to talk to Colette because it's been a while since we've talked about wolves on here, and unfortunately, their situation is as dire as ever. Idaho, Montana, and Wyoming are killing them as fast as they can and in more and more horrific ways. One of those ways is that in Idaho, they're shooting wolves from helicopters. And Colette is the primary author of a petition to get this banned. It's very nice to meet you, Colette.
Very nice to meet you, too.
I want to focus on your work on wolves. The wolf issue is really, I mean, it feels like it's getting worse and worse. For someone who's not in it, like me, and trying to explain it to other people and explain how wolves were on the endangered species list and then they weren't, but some are now, and the ones in the states that actually have the wolves aren't. So can we start with that, with the endangered species list?
Absolutely. I live in Minnesota, and Minnesota is one of the few places where wolves weren't exterminated in those, you know, early years of bounty programs and laying out poisons for predators. And, you know, where the federal government's role then was to absolutely wipe them off the face of the earth. You know, so in the 1970s, wolves got protection under the act, and they were listed as threatened in Minnesota. And threatened is just gives a little bit less protection and allows for killing in certain circumstances, mostly to protect the livestock industry. And then across the rest of the lower 48, they're listed as endangered. And then, you know, starting in like the early 2000s, the Fish and Wildlife Service began efforts to remove protections from wolves. After one court victory, there was a rider attached to a must-pass spending bill and an appropriations bill that amended the Endangered Species Act to remove protections from wolves in the northern Rocky Mountain states. So that's Idaho, Wyoming, and Montana, and then the eastern third of Washington and Oregon. And those wolves to this day still have no protection under the Endangered Species Act, although we have petitioned the Fish and Wildlife Service to relist those wolves, largely because of some really awful wolf killing that the states, in particular Montana and Idaho, have authorized, and the Fish and Wildlife Service is considering that now. But the most recent attempt by the Fish and Wildlife Service to remove protections from wolves, you know, everywhere else they were listed, you know, outside the northern Rocky Mountains, that was reversed by a court in February. I think it was February of last year now. And now we're waiting to see what the Fish and Wildlife Service will do with that next. And we do believe, based on their decades of past behavior, that the next move will be another version of reducing or removing protections from wolves. And we'll fight that again.
with the rider that happened with the six states, is that how the Endangered Species Act was supposed to work? Like were riders, has that been a thing in the past?
That was the first time where a decision about whether a species could be protected was based on those types of political considerations rather than what the Endangered Species Act requires, which is consideration of the best available science. So it was really disappointing for conservationists like myself, and we really worried that it would be precedent setting and that Congress would interfere going forward and try to do that with other species that might be, you know, politically inconvenient, so to speak. But fortunately, there is a lot of public support for endangered species, and we've been able to beat back all of these riders since then and the various bills that have gone forward to both for wolves and other places, but other species too, like sage grouse. And there's been a lot of attempts and bills introduced that just haven't gone anywhere to remove protections.
And what about grizzlies, the attempts to delist them?
Grizzly bears in many ways are just sort of a shadow of wolves. The same sort of situation that's occurred with wolves has occurred with grizzly bears, where we had a widely prevalent species that was targeted by the federal government and reduced in numbers. You know, they remain and they're doing well in just a few areas, mostly around the Yellowstone area. And then the Fish and Wildlife Service has tried to remove protections from those bears, and conservation groups have brought them to court and got those set aside. So, you know, right now, grizzly bears are protected throughout the lower 48, but we do expect another proposed delisting, you know, probably sometime in the next year or so.
And just so people get some perspective, for wolves, before the first big, huge extermination 100 years ago, how many wolves approximately did we have in the lower 48?
Scientists don't know for sure, but estimates are around 2 million animals, and, you know, now we have like 7,000.
It's pathetic.
That's right. And we still have huge regions of the country where wolves could thrive again, like the Northeast, for example, where we only have scattered wolves. We're just starting to get evidence of possible breeding wolves in the Northeast, but there's huge potential for true recovery there. And same with the Southern Rockies, like around Colorado. In the last few years, we've finally seen wolves, you know, make it out of the Northern Rockies, make it to Colorado, start to breed. And with ongoing protections of the act, we could see, you know, wolves in the Southern Rockies, you know, a thriving population there. But they're not going to do it if they're not federally protected.
Maybe I'm just making this up because there's been so much press in the past few years, but it feels like the wolf hatred is a lot stronger now than it was, say, 10 years ago.
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure about that. I think that there, you know, with the advent of social media, it's a lot easier for minority groups to have you know, a soapbox, so to speak, and it's so much like in your face now. I mean, you can see these, you know, hunters posting pictures with piles of dead wolves and the, you know, laughing emojis of their friends. But I think that sort of mentality among, you know, a minority of the population has always been there. And I actually think that attitudes are getting better generally because values follow the science in many ways. We know now how very important they are ecologically. And I think just generally in terms of people recognizing that wolves in particular, I mean, they're canids, right? They're like the dogs that we invite into our homes. And people know that these are loyal animals, smart animals, animals that really can suffer, that can be lonely and scared. You know, even if they might never see a wolf in the wild, I think it gives a lot of people, I know it does for me, just a sense of awe that we share the world with animals like this.
Me too. Will you talk about, from a science perspective, why wolves are important?
I mean, they perform important ecological services. You know, even hunters, for example, recognize that wolves play such an important role in strengthening the populations of prey animals that they hunt, like deer and elk, because they remove the sick, you know, the diseased animals that otherwise could impact the herd more broadly. So, you know, especially, for example, with chronic wasting disease that is really decimating deer herds in Minnesota, for example, where I live, In areas where we have wolves, the incidence of these diseases in the deer is much, much lower. There's even economic benefits from wolves for people. So there's studies that show in areas where we have wolves, the amount of collisions between cars and deer is much lower. And it's not because wolves reduce the numbers of deer. It's because wolves keep deer away from roadsides. Deer that are scared of predators don't just hang out in the open and area along a road. And then there's just these tremendous ecological values in terms of shaping entire ecosystems. I mean, it went viral, so many people have seen those videos of how the landscape around Yellowstone changed upon the reintroduction with wolves, going so far as to affect the way streams flow in the area, you know, because once wolves were reintroduced, then elk couldn't just stand on the stream side and eat away all the vegetation, so elk got on the move. And then the willows and other shrubs by the stream sides grew back. And then the migratory birds that could nest in those shrubs came back. And the roots from those shrubs would stabilize stream banks. And, you know, it just went on and on. And it's really beautiful. It happens in less significant ways, too. Like in the Midwest where I live, the simple thing of, you know, I love to go out in the spring and see those spring ephemeral wildflowers that before the canopies of trees leaf out, you get these beautiful little forest floor wildflowers. And when there's so many deer in the landscape, they just get browsed right away. And you never have that show of, you know, the white anemones on the forest floor. But with wolves, we've seen growing biodiversity in our forest ecosystem.
This is why the endangered species list exists, right? Because what we've seen in the past few years, especially, is leaving management up to the states, especially Idaho, Montana, Wyoming, has been kind of a disaster.
Yeah. That's an understatement. It really has been a huge disaster.
Yeah. And it's been insanely cruel where they're killing all the wolves. And one thing that you meaning Center for Biological Diversity, petitioned for and succeeded in November, congratulations, was the stopping the use of cyanide bombs on public lands. And I'm only laughing because the fact that we still used cyanide bombs on public lands until like 2 weeks ago is when it got banned is so beyond insane to me. It's stunning.
Yeah, it was a campaign that I knew we would eventually win because it is just too ridiculous. You know, we still have a ways to go here because they're banned on lands managed by the Bureau of Land Management, which is, you know, tens of millions of acres, but the Forest Service still allows these devices to be used. And, you know, the Forest Service is where so many people enjoy going out hiking with their dogs and camping with their kids. And they just, I mean, they can't be safely used anywhere. These are these small spring-loaded devices that are baited with a sweet smell that attracts wolves, foxes, coyotes, but anything that would be attracted to like rotting meat. So even like bald eagles, for example, bears, and right. At the top of that, and family dogs, absolutely. There's been so many really sad stories of, you know, people hiking with their dogs and just watching their dog die before their eyes. And it's a really horrific death by poison. It's cyanide. You know, if the top of that device is touched, then the cyanide powder is spewed. There was a really horrific incident in 2017 where a teenager was hiking on Bureau of Land Management land right behind his home. There's like a hill, his neighborhood abutted public land. He was just hiking with his dog behind his house as he always did. And he saw this small little metal cylinder poking out of the ground. And he's just like, what's that? You know, bent down to touch it. His life was spared, likely only because the wind was blowing strong and it blew the powder away from his face to his dog. And his dog died before him. And he was just temporarily blinded, but he survived. And it's just, I mean, we can't wait for another tragedy like that to occur before these are banned where people are out hiking. It doesn't make any sense.
It was legal for decades, right, on Bureau of Land Management land.
Yeah, these are like really ancient tools. It seems like something that really should have been gone a long time ago. I mean, we just shouldn't be using poisons in public places like that. It's too indiscriminate.
Forest Service land is different than Bureau of Land Management land? Because you would think they're both federal.
So they're managed by different federal agencies. So the BLM land, that's the shorthand for Bureau of Land Management. BLM land is managed by the Department of Interior, and Forest Service land is managed by the Department of Agriculture. I would love to have been, you know, a fly in the wall in those conference rooms that led to the ban on BLM land. I do think it in some way stemmed from the petition that the center and our partners filed in June that was directed towards the BLM. But I also think it had to do with the actual leadership at BLM. The BLM director, Tracy Stone Manning, is a wildlife advocate. And I think she personally was outraged that these were still being used and knew that she could make a difference. And I think now that the BLM has banned it, the Forest Service, I'm really hopeful that the Forest Service will follow suit.
So that's crazy. I didn't realize, like, pretty much anything you fight for BLM land, then you also have to fight for separately for forests. Like, it's so stupid.
Yeah, it is frustrating.
And your current one of very many current petitions and fights is in Idaho to stop hunters from shooting down wolves from helicopters, which is also, like, so beyond me that this is legal in the first place. But will you talk about that?
It shocked me too that this was being allowed, because, you know, I had heard about this Federal Airborne Hunting Act that prohibits hunting wildlife from aircraft like helicopters. And so we really, when we heard that that Idaho was considering and then approved these proposals for this aerial gunning of wolves, I'm a lawyer. I've got two colleagues that are lawyers, and we just dug in quickly to figure out what's going on here. And there is an exception in that law that allows for gunning down wildlife for the purposes of protecting livestock. So it can't be purely for sport hunting. Although here, I mean, it's difficult. It really becomes a very big loophole, because at the end of the day, they've authorized use of these helicopters in areas that have had no conflicts with livestock. So it seems pretty fishy to say that, oh, we're doing that to protect livestock when there hasn't been a problem. So it looks to us like just an awful blood sport, honestly. And it's much harder to get at that over private lands and state lands. But on federal lands, you have a whole suite of additional protections about how federal land should be managed. So in this instance, we went after the Forest Service, and there's endangered species that live on areas where this aerial gunning could occur, like grizzly bears. There's a lot of great science about how grizzly bears really get frightened by noises that come from above. You know, animals are used to noises laterally, you know, like a human coming towards them or a truck or something, but something that swoops in from above is very startling, and they've even been known to abandon, you know, their dens and leave their young susceptible. We've got wolverines, which are now just finally listed and can also be impacted. It's something that is really pretty dangerous and yucky, you know? Like, if I'm out camping on a farm on Forest Service lands, I don't want to see a helicopter with someone shooting out of it. You know, it's really inappropriate.
Well, and also, just for people who don't know, I mean, this hysteria on the fact that wolves are so dangerous that we need to, like, shoot them from helicopters. Will you just talk about how much damage wolves are actually causing in these places?
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, as an initial matter, wolves pose no threat to public safety. You know, I live in Minnesota, like I said, where wolves have never been exterminated. We've got just short of 3,000 wolves in Minnesota. I love the outdoors. I'm finding every excuse I can to go up to wolf country with the explicit goal of seeing wolves. Only twice in my entire life out of thousands of trips to, like, prime wolf habitat have I ever seen a wolf. They are so frightened of people that, you know, we're not talking Little Red Riding Hood here. No. In terms of impacts on livestock, for sure, wolves can cause damage, but that's for ranchers and operations that aren't taking common sense measures to prevent these impacts. So, you know, if they're going to leave sick, wounded cattle out, cattle that are giving birth, you know, not providing proper veterinary care or disposing of carcasses, that's going to you know, if it's an area with wolves, they're going to find that and then you'll have a problem. But if you do basic things like, you know, good animal husbandry, bringing animals that are susceptible into the barn or into a fenced area, using things like motion sensing lights or noises, having human presence, going out and checking on your animals on horseback or by ATV, all these non-lethal methods are proven to prevent conflicts with wolves. And we're really frustrated that too often people, livestock operators, just turn to shooting animals instead of preventing the problem, because it becomes a never-ending just cycle of violence, really, because you kill one wolf, the rest of the pack is more vulnerable, then they can't hunt as effectively. Oftentimes then it busts up the pack, and then you've got individual wolves that are more likely to pull the easy prey, you know, to risk going near a human establishment to get the sheep or whatever. Plus, you just haven't prevented the problem. You haven't addressed the underlying problem that attracted wolves to the area in the first place. So it's a permanent fix if you, you know, put up a fence or bring them to the
barn. So is anyone trying to pass those kind of laws, like laws that ranchers or farmers have to, you know, do certain things to coexist?
Well, one thing that's happened in the last, say, 2 to 3 years is that there's been a lot of funding to help ranchers implement these non-lethal methods. So, for example, there's this tool called Flaudry, which is basically little flags on a line that you can hang up to create they flap in the wind and create motion that scares wolves away. And it's very inexpensive and can be installed much more quickly and cheaply than fencing. And there's been efforts to get money for what Wildlife Services, which is usually the federal wildlife killing agency. That's what they have traditionally done and still do a lot of. But now that they have funding for non-lethals, we're seeing a big difference. In Minnesota, where I live, they've hired someone who just does non-lethal implementation now. Yeah, the ranchers that have used these things are getting real results and realizing that, you know what, it's a lot easier just to fix this problem once and be done with it than year after year having to call out folks to put traps and, you know, shoot on your land.
That's great news.
Yeah.
That's a positive.
Mm-hmm.
Because,
yeah.
And just to go back for a second, you're petitioning right now to stop the helicopters, but there's also a lot of other really horrific ways wolves were being killed in Idaho, Montana, Wyoming. Including like mothers being, it's allowed now. You can go shoot the mother and her pups in the den with a like automatic rifle or whatever.
This was like 3 years ago now that the state legislatures in both Idaho and Montana just were authorizing. I mean, even things as awful as like you can run down in Idaho, you can run down wolves with snowmobiles. You can just chase them until they get exhausted and kill them by hitting them with your snowmobile. You know, just really just the amount of suffering that entails in that. And in Montana now, they allow using dogs to chase down wolves, which, you know, essentially becomes like state sanctioned dog fighting. You have this horrible scenario where the packs of dogs are surrounding the wolf pack and it just comes to a bloody end. And these are blood sports.
Yeah.
This is something that we should be way beyond as a society. I am hopeful that with enough public awareness through presentations like this and, you know, continued advocacy and outrage by organizations like mine that will see an end to that. But for now, it's something of nightmares.
Do you go after like those individual ways, like the dog hunting? Is that something that you guys try to stop, or is the easiest thing just to get them back on the endangered species list?
Right? It's both for sure. I mean, that's actually something that's on my that I've got a draft right now. I'm working on trying to get at hounding in Montana. It's something, and so in Wisconsin, when wolves came off the list in February of 2021, there was a horrible wolf hunt there that killed more than 200 wolves in 3 days. About 3/4 of the wolves that were killed by hound hunters. So my organization, along with dozens of other groups filed a petition with the U.S. Forest Service there in Wisconsin to get hounding banned there, so that when wolves come off the list again, hopefully that tool, that hunting tool, really about as cruel as you can get, and so ecologically damaging because you can kill so many wolves in such a short time period, hopefully that will be banned. But, you know, we would like to see all hounding banned on national forests. Right now, they use dogs to chase bears, and it's you know, you can think of like a big lumbering bear being forced to run into exhaustion.
And then the dogs just rip them to shreds.
Well, if they can get up a tree, they do, but that's a pretty awkward thing for a bear. And oftentimes the trees are too small and then they do fall out.
Oh,
and there's just horrible videos on the internet that I don't want anybody to ever have to view, that I wish I never would have myself, of really cool scenarios there.
Hounding seems like something that should just be illegal across the board in all states. Like, the fact that these are some of the battles that you have to fight is atrocious.
Yeah. And there are a lot of states that have banned
right.
it because of its cruelty and because of public safety. There's been some terrible circumstances where people are just like out hiking with their dog and all of a sudden get surrounded by a pack of hounds. And there's just one where there's this woman who was trying to fight off this pack of hounds from getting her little dog, and she crawled into a culvert and was trying to protect her dog, and the hunters are nowhere nearby because they just use these GPS collars, so they're just sitting back at their truck probably, you know, having a beer or whatever.
Oh, God.
And then they finally see that the collars have stopped running, and they're like, okay, well, you know, we'll go find it. And they see this woman cowering in the culvert, you know? So it is really
yeah.
dangerous. And I'm glad a lot of states have banned it, but we're going to keep pushing for in those states where it isn't banned.
And then what does it take to get wolves back on the list, like across the board?
Yeah. What we've done in the Northern Rockies is we, after Idaho and Montana passed those really yucky laws that expanded wolf killing, then we put together a citizen petition to the Fish and Wildlife Service that documented all the threats that wolves are facing, demonstrated how the states no longer provide what the act requires, which is an adequate regulatory mechanism to ensure that the species doesn't get listed again. We put together that scientific and legal document, submitted it to the Fish and Wildlife Service. Then we sued the service because they missed their deadline to issue a decision on the petition.
Their deadline was,
and now
it was a year, right? They had?
Yeah. Yep. That's exactly right. Yep. So under the settlement now, they need to make a decision by February of 2024. We've got our fingers crossed.
That'd be amazing. And is there anything
yeah.
people can do to help them at all?
One really simple one is to just take opportunities when you see something that you find objectionable to speak out to it. Whether it's, you know, there's a social media post where some hunter's bragging about some awful method, or an article, you know, writing a letter to the editor to express, you know, pro-wildlife and pro-wolf views. I think ultimately, if we're going to have a change, it's going to be reflected in our values. And people can open up the eyes of other people about why these animals are important, why their suffering matters. And I think that's a huge role. But more specifically, you know, targeting decision makers, letting the director of the Fish and Wildlife Service, Martha Williams, know that you care about wolves, that you think they're more valuable alive than dead. You know, when you're hiking in Forest Service land, stopping in and talking to the people at the visitor center and, you know, expressing your concerns, all those things make a difference.
Thank you so much, Colette. Thank you for all the work you do, and congratulations on some of the recent successes. And thank you for today.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you for having me, and I really appreciated the conversation.
To learn more about Colette and to learn more about the Center for Biological Diversity, go to our website, speciesunite.com. We will have links to everything. We are on Facebook and Instagram at Species Unite. If you have a spare moment and could do us a favor, please subscribe, rate, review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. It really helps people find the show. If you'd like to support the podcast, we would greatly appreciate it. Go to our website, speciesunite.com, and click donate. I would like to thank everyone at Species Unite, including Gary Knutson, Caitlin Pierce, Amy Jones, Paul Healy, Santina Polke, Ayana Peoples, and Anna Kollner, who wrote and performed today's music. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day.